The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of the Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Hey there, everybody. We welcome you back to Afternoons with Mike here on The Shepherd. It's always a real high spot for me to be able to sit here in this studio and talk to people who are in the community doing things for the glory of God. I've got one of those men here, a man that I did not know prior to today, but somebody that is well known in the community. Robert Stewart is here, part of Orlando's City Council and very involved in the Church on the Drive, as it is now called, was College Park Baptist. Robert, thank you for coming in and welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
It's really great here on the show to have this venue, this opportunity to get to know people that are in the community. Having lived in Orlando for 17 years, then moving away, the magic number is 17 years, Robert. I'm not sure why that is, but I was away for 17 and now I'm back. And I'm having a great time because the city changed a lot from 2002 to 2019. And these changes are just so much fun to continue to discover. But you've been a part of this area, and we're going to learn more about that in segment two when we find out about your role on City Council and also over at the church. But first of all, let's begin with you. What part of the country did you grow up in, and how did you become a believer?
Well, that's a long story, but I'll try to keep it short. I am born and raised in Orlando, Florida. Born and raised actually, and spent my entire life, with the exception of college, in College Park. Mm. So born in a couple of blocks off of Lake Ivanhoe. I came back home. We bought a house a couple of blocks off of Lake Silver. Raised our family there. And then about 2007, when the kids are kind of now settled, we found another house. And that was about a block or two off of Lake Fairview. Mm. So my entire life has been hubbed around this downtown core. I've worked in...
Except for the years that you were in Gainesville.
Right.
At UF.
Right.
Go Gators.
Go Gators. Absolutely.
That's right.
But anyway, so all that is kind of part of growing up. So I grew up in the 50s and 60s, and College Park was a great place to grow up.
Went to school pre-Disney back then.
Yeah, well, went to school at Princeton, Lee, and Edgewater, and then went up to the University of Florida, like five of the six kids that we had growing up. But we were active at First Baptist Church. My dad got active there when he moved back into town in 1938, mm. Met my mother at First Baptist Church as she was a young a student in town.
This would have been downtown at that point.
Right, it's downtown. And they met in 1944.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And during
44,
the war, yeah.
And got married a few, the rumor is they got married 7 weeks later and then honeymooned in Key West, which was kind of a sweet little thing to do. But the dad was active as a deacon there, active on the building commission, active in every part of the church. And we saw that growing up. That was part of what we did. And he was also active in the small detail of building a building called Orlando Baptist Towers, which was now houses, 300 or 400 people as a senior home.
Mm-hmm.
And had the foresight to do that in the early 60s, which was really kind of neat. So anyway, we were always engaged. We were a family that got up in the morning on Sunday morning, and mom put our tithe into our envelope, and we took the envelope in, and we're proud to do that. So I grew up in kind of that old kind of Southern Baptist world, if you want to call it that. And it was such a wonderful base for that. The short story in getting to know Christ was that we had just opened up the church, had just opened up their new sanctuary. And so it was Mother's Day, I have a twin sister, and so we tell this story often, and we didn't have anything to give mom for Mother's Day, so we went forward on that day.
That's a new one. I've not heard that one before.
And as it turns out, they had a baptism on Father's Day. So it was just
covered all the bases.
Whatever it took, it, you know, we didn't have a gift, but that's a little sidebar of the story. But we were raised as in the church, raised as Christians, got to know Christ at a very early age. But it became more real as you come back after college. I mean, you go through the youth program and youth group and all the things that you typically do back then. And the music program was the strength of the youth group. And so, go to college, got engaged, got involved in the fraternity up there, got involved in student government as well as my college. I graduated with an advertising degree from the New York College of Journalism and Communications. Mm-hmm. Then came back here and really got engaged in a church. And that's kind of really where Christ kind of, you know, gets a hold of you. It was our desire that our kids would be raised in the same way that we were raised. They were involved and engaged in a church, because I think that puts a moral base to have a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And it puts a routine in that. So we did the same thing. I raised our kids the same way that we were raised, and they came to know Christ at an early age. And so they've been active, and they've been raising their family the same way.
You know, so many people around us, Robert, they don't do that. They don't have that base, that foundation, as you said. And, you know, it's, to me, I can't imagine. I grew up in a church as well, got my trip to the altar at age 10, where I dedicated my life to the Lord and really believe he did a marvelous thing. I never walked away from him all the way from that time. But families that don't have this, A, they don't know what they're missing, and B, I don't know how they cope with the ins and outs of life.
It really is hard. I mean, and you know, I'm involved in ministry at the church, and we'll talk about that later on. But there's a core of what people believe now that if something happens, they'll be able to turn to Christ or turn back to God. Mm-hmm. They'll be able to do that. And oftentimes that's probably a case, but in many occasions that doesn't really happen. And they're left kind of with a void until somebody can be frank with them and tell them about the things that they need to know about. You know, I've been involved in the ministry, like I said, for forever at our church, and got involved in youth ministry. When we first got there, I tease about it. We joined a group that we called the Married Young Adults, and I was 24, 25, and my wife was just slightly younger than me, and everybody was in that same group, and mm-hmm. it was just so much fun. Okay, well, now I'm 67, and many of those people in our Sunday school class today, our Bible study class today, were also in that same group. So we now call ourselves Married Young Adult 7 in the grading class of the Baptist. So, you know, so we went from Married Young Adult 1 to Married Young Adult 2, and now we're Married Young Adult 7, and next week I'll celebrate our 45th wedding anniversary. Mm-hmm. So I feel like a married young adult, even in the case of doing that. So it was a way for us to get engaged. And so as every person goes, and you know this from your role as a pastor, when you begin to take people out of their element, they begin to see where God can work. And it was always important to me to be engaged in youth trips, youth ministry, be engaged, you know, let me kind of give a different perspective. All of us want quality time with our children. And so therefore we define that by how we're going to do quality time.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that quality time comes with quantity time. You don't know when quality time's ever going to happen.
That's a good point.
And so you have to commit to the time. So I can tell you that in the time committed to the youth ministry, there were a handful of really quality times of getting to know the youth, and they now are friends of mine. I have a couple in my Bible study that they were in our Sunday school class, and when I was doing youth leadership, 30 mm-hmm. or 40 years ago. And that quality time is what engaged and changed their life. But you got to be there. You got to be on the youth trip. You got to be at the events. You got to be there because you don't know when the quality time is going to happen. The same with raising a child. You got to be there because there's going to be a moment in time when they're asking something that really creates that quality moment where you have a teachable engagement where you're doing something different. And I've had that with my children about their faith, about how they came to Christ, about the role that we all play in terms of being in Christ's kingdom here as best we can. It's an important investment, but the investment is you've got to invest time and you got to be open and willing. So
I love that you and I are about the same age. I think you must have been born in 53 and got married in 76. Am I right on
correct?
That?
Correct.
Yeah, and we're right there together. So Cindy and I celebrate 45 in September of this year.
Congratulations.
Yeah, it's going to be exciting.
Congratulations. And I tease my wife. I have 5 great years. It just took 45 to get them. Okay, Ann, I'm just teasing. Okay.
Now you're in the doghouse. were doing so great until
I know. She's heard it before, and that's not true. God has given me a wonderful spiritual partner, I'm in love with her more than I was when we got married. So
that's great.
That's what it's supposed to be, I think.
Yeah, I think it is supposed to be. But again, so many people, when they find out that we've been married almost 45 years, they're shocked because they don't see a lot of people around them that hit those kind of milestones anymore. But, you know, my own parents were married 64 before my dad passed away. And then Cindy's mom and dad are still alive. They celebrated their 65th. And, you know, that's just the goal.
Ann's parents, my wife's parents, I think they were married 54 years before, maybe a little longer, before he passed away. And then my dad passed away early at the age of 70. And my dad was 19 years older than my mother. So they were married about 25 or 30, I guess, 35 years, 30 years, and he passed away, and mom never remarried. But it's that longevity is something that ought to be applauded. At the same time, when you look at your life and moving forward, and you see your life partner, I've not done marriage counseling. I don't think I'm great at it. I just express what I believe,
You've experienced. Yeah,
and so when you're in love and you share the world together, it makes it a lot more fun, frankly.
Mm-hmm. It does.
And so I enjoy that.
Yeah, Cindy has been away this past week. Returns tomorrow night, and the whole thing about being alone right now. I learn every time this happens when we're separated for even just a week. It makes me realize how much I love having her around all the time, and not one that I would want to have it any other way.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, you say that because my wife has done the same thing, and I'm so excited about her being able to go away, and then the moment she's left, I'm waiting for her to return.
Exactly right.
It reminds me, I was president of our Rotary Club, and it reminds me that, you know, when you become president, you have to be president-elect, and you have to take all the training that they give you to be president of the Rotary Club, and Rotary is very effective at it. And you spend the entire time looking to be a president. And the common line between past presidents is the best day of being president of Rotary Club is the first day. And the second best day is your last day.
Last day, I knew it. Same thing about owning a boat.
that's good. That's a good analogy.
That's what I've heard anyway. But my goodness, that is a great story. And having the heritage that you've had with seeing, the life of a family attending Sunday service, and even I picked up on the fact that you talked about the priority that they would make on paying tithes and being not just committed in person, but committed financially with their heart and soul and everything that the tithe represents. That really does make for a life statement for a young man or young woman growing up. And we need more of that today. We need more models. I'm a firm believer in the fact that more is caught than is taught.
Well, I agree.
And you're giving your kids now lots of opportunities to catch things and to see what it is that is truly important to their dad and to your friends and your family members. And boy, I'm just grateful for that. Did you know early on, Robert, that you were going to be involved in, let's say, community or civic works?
Absolutely no. Yeah. I had a whole picture going someplace else. I served at the Christian Service Center for 25 years as executive director, and got involved 6 or 7 years before that as a board member, and eventually was selected as president-elect. And we moved our executive director out, and they asked me to step in and become an interim executive director. I agreed. I thought it was a good idea under the condition, because I had other plans for my life. I mean, God had something different for me, but I had other plans for my life. And so so I said, okay, this is what I'm going to do. The president will go and do the search committee. Usually the president-elect would do that, but I'm the president-elect. So you do the search committee, go find somebody. I'll learn a little bit about how the operation of this runs. So when the next person comes in, I'll be able to kind of step him through a little bit. Mm-hmm. And we'll kind of shorten that kind of learning curve. And they said, okay, great. And then about 3 months later, they came back and said, oh, we've done a search committee. We want you to give us your resume. And I said, I'm not giving my resume. God has not called me to do this. They said, just give it to us. I said, okay, fine. So a month later, they interviewed me and sat in the room and said, you know, we'd like to talk to you about this. And I said, God has not called me to do this. And frankly, this organization is not ready for what I think it needs to be done. And this, their answer was, what needs to be done? I said, you need to do this and this and this and this. And if you're not willing to do that, nobody's going to come here. Doesn't matter whether it's me or not. They said, we want you to do it. And I had, you know, put a fleece out and said, look, I can ruffle feathers pretty easily. And so I said, God, if this works, it needs to be unanimous. I can't have anybody in opposition to me, because I'm not going to go into a place without complete support. And sure enough, the committee was unanimous. And then sure enough, the board was unanimous. And I went, oh, God, what have you gotten me into? and that was in 95.
Wow.
So I served there 25 years. And I will tell you, I don't have much time on this segment, but let me.
We've got about another minute.
Okay. Well, I won't tell you this story until the next segment. But the idea of serving there came about from the idea that I served as a ministry leader for the John Guest evangelistic team that we put together, a team called Break Free 93, where our goal was to do nothing but do evangelism in the community. I got hired to run that. The volunteer director of that hired me to go work in his business. And then in the midst of that, now I go to the Christian Service Center, and I think to myself, every one of the qualities that needs to be there, God has prepared me for, mm-hmm. and placed me in that position, not by title, but by the experience that he'd given me.
Yeah, so, you weren't given a title to be a leader. You were a leader before you received the title.
Well, you're very kind to say that. But I will tell you this, it's kind of fascinating. And in the interview process, they said, hey, do you know so-and-so as a pastor? And I said, well, yeah, as a matter of fact, I know him. They said, well, how well do you know him? I said, well, I've preached in his church. He goes, you preached in his church. I said, well, yeah, I preached here and here and here and here. And we did around evangelism, and I knew, you want me to call him? And they said, you're exactly what we need.
Wow.
And I said, okay, that's how God had kind of prepared me to place me, because all the people now at the Christian Service Center was dealing with are pastors and churches. I knew them from a different perspective. I've been in their offices and prayed with them. And so now God's placed me in a place to help them serve.
Having such an organic position as what you're describing is what they were needing. My guest today is Robert Stewart. We're going to be back with Robert coming up in a moment. Don't go away. We'll take a quick break and be right back here on Afternoons with Mike. Having a great time today in my talk with Robert Stewart. Robert is city council member, and my goodness, there's so much about this man that I'm getting to know. One of the things that we'll be talking about is the fact that he's an umpire. My goodness, baseball umpires, a really, I would say, position that is not always loved by the fans or the players, but a very important one, and you've done it a long time.
With umpires are a special breed.
Yeah.
But I tease often, because I would tell people that the two great books that control my life for a long time was the Bible and the Little League rule book. and they are incredibly similar.
Mm-hmm.
And that is that there are some rules you have, and then but the whole goal of the Bible is not to give you rules; it's to give you intent. Little League baseball is the same way. And dealing with umpires, there's a lot in rules that are fixed and you can't make a change. But almost every call that an umpire makes is judgment. And you have to make the judgment based upon the intent of the rules.
Mm-hmm.
And the intent is that everybody gets treated fairly
right.
on the game. The Bible is the same way. And so then I went to city council and said, well, that's how ordinances are written. There's some cases where it's always exactly black and white. And then there's this cases where it's intent. So you have to take what's black and white and figure out what, how to make it work over here in an area that's doesn't quite fit. And so it's a similar, you know, all that's very similar to what I do.
I would think it's, there have been some times where you were tempted to take your mask and your pad to city council, right?
Well, yeah, there's an article about me. I had the opportunity to do two World Series for the Little League Baseball.
Oh.
And so I've,
you know, out in Omaha.
No. It's a Little League World Series is up in Williamsport.
Oh, okay.
And I've done that, and I can spend an hour telling you all the stories. I'm the guy who, when I had a woman particularly one day who was not happy with my strike zone, and one of our league plays, and so I got out from the fence. I'm from inside the fence, walked over and sat next to her, not saying a word. And everybody watched me what I was doing. And I said, and they said, well, are you going to be on the play? I said, no, you can actually see better from here than where I was before. I'm going to call the game from right here. And the woman looked at me and said, I'm so sorry. I just said, don't do it again. And I walked back in and finished the game. And everybody threatens to do that. I've actually done that.
Oh my goodness.
I've sent, you know, parents yelling at each other. I've sent parents home and said, okay, y'all go home, come back in 2 hours. We're going to have a great game. And we had a great game. Kids just playing and enjoying the game. I've done all that kind of stuff before. I had a guy come out of a dugout with a baseball bat at me. And he was drunk as a skunk and came out because he didn't like the strike zone. Or then like called a balk on his son or something like that. And came out with a bat. I'm full in uniform. I'm 17 years old. Don't know what to do, except that he has this bat in his hand. And I said, look, you're not going to get past me because I got this equipment. You can't hurt me. And whatever I told him paused him just long enough that somebody else came out from the dugout and grabbed him and took him off the field.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking to myself, God, I could have gotten into the middle of a fight with an old man, but somehow God protected me and said, okay, don't do that. So I've been in that case. I've been in occasions where guys, you know, throw rocks at my car when I drive away. But I see guys today that I umpired and umpired them and their children. And their answer is, God, you are the best. Mm-hmm. I said, why? They said, because you cared about the kids. It was all about the children. It wasn't about the game. It was about the kids and how to have kids understand life lessons from baseball. And that's the most fun about being on the field is kind of the coolest thing in the whole world. Man,
I would think so.
I love that.
I played Little League for 1 year, and it was a truly great experience for me and loved it. And I've just never forgotten it. I mean, it's one of those, those are magical times for a little guy, or I guess there are co-ed leagues now for young ladies as well. But
well, I've done baseball and softball. I've done, you know, 18-year-old and little league down to the T-ball. I mean, that's because I only do volunteer baseball. I used to do high school baseball, and it just got to a point where it's hard when you're a volunteer umpire and you have a volunteer coach and volunteer people, then there's a level of respect that you have because you all are committing your time. When I got paid to umpire and the coach started yelling at me, the question was, how much do I take?
Mm-hmm.
And
how much is it
I'm
worth
getting
it?
Paid $50 a game. Do I get, how much is $50? Well, if I'm a volunteer, I don't take anything. And I teach that from everybody I talk to. And we used to run, I was one of the district trainers for umpires here in Orlando, and we would run those training classes for people all over the state of Florida, and we'd come and teach them how to do it. And I had the opportunity to talk to them about what they should be doing on the field and how do they integrate with a child. So those are life lessons that you learn that you don't forget, you know?
Wow. It's really true. I think not only would the kids not forget it, but when you see somebody coming at you with a bat and you're 17 years old and you're the umpire, I don't think you'll forget that one either.
No. And I didn't forget it. We just dedicated a field in downtown Orlando, an area that was where the first African-American Little League team played the first white team in the history of Little League baseball.
Oh, wow.
It was in 1955 in downtown Orlando, an area called Lake Lorna Dune. And when I was a kid, now I'm at the time, I'm 2 or 3 years old, but by the time early 60s come around, I'm playing Little League baseball and I'm playing on the same, very same field. And then at the age of 14, I become an umpire. And now at 16 and 17, I'm umpiring on the very same field that this occurred on. And later on, the field went away, but we didn't forget the story. And we've recognized the fact that in the midst of all the things going on in the troubles in 1955 in the world, Orlando, Florida stood tall and just said, we're just going to play baseball. It doesn't matter what color you are. It matters that you're playing baseball. Little League baseball didn't do the same thing. The team that won in South Carolina, nobody agreed to play the black team. They all the white teams wouldn't play them. And so they won the district, won the sectional. The state wouldn't play them. They won the state effectively. And then they went to the Southeast region and nobody would play them because they were black. Then they went to the World Series. And they got to the World Series. They said, wait a second, all these teams have forfeited. We want to play. And they said, well, Little League, in their lack of wisdom, said, I'm sorry, you can't play because you haven't played a game. You have to have played a game to get here. And their answer was, nobody would play us. And so they then had an exhibition game where they played at the Little League World Series. Well, that happens in late August of 1955. In July of 1955, a team from Pensacola, a black team from Pensacola, was playing a white team in Orlando, Florida. And I'm thinking, I would never, the other stuff doesn't matter. I had a chance to go back to the Williamsport and had a chance to meet some of the guys from that 1955 team from South Carolina. And now since then, Little League has written a book called Let Them Play. And it's all about this experience and all about these kids not being able to actually compete because of the color of their skin. Mm-hmm. And Little League changed significantly when that happened, which I was glad for. So other leagues, not quite so. But Little League stepped up and said, after that, this is not right. We're going to do the right thing. So,
Big lessons in life, yeah. Seen and learned through sports so often like this. And they really are kind of almost like a microcosm of what's going on in the country. And by this past year, past couple of years, really, it's been very difficult to watch some of the things go on in this country that have brought division, more striving than I would have ever thought would be possible again.
Yeah.
But that's where we are right now. So we need those lessons learned as what you've just described. And maybe God will allow that yet to happen. Before, in our last segment, there was a story that you were wanting to give us. Jump in there and tell
them. Let me tell you about one of the things I think is important, and this happens with both my children, and it's an important lesson I think that we learned. But one particular story comes to mind, and that is that the question of that your faith is often caught instead of taught. And my daughter got married in 2005, I guess it was. And she had contacted me and said, I'd like to do something special for the bridal party when they're here. Mm-hmm. I said, great. What would you like to do? And she says, I want to come down to the Christian Service Center. I want to serve daily bread. I said, with who? She goes, the bridal party. We're going to have our bridesmaids luncheon. And so the first thing we decided to do was that we want to serve daily bread. And then we're going to go have our bridesmaids luncheon. I said, you got to be kidding me. She goes, no. So all of a sudden now these 8 gorgeous young women come down. My daughter and her brides in her, you know, her pretend veil and all the other in the same way. And they come down and serve 300 meals to people who have no place to go.
That had to be a visual.
And of course I got great pictures of it so I would never forget it. But to have your daughter say, I want to come where you are, is and have my people, that my friends know what you do and what we do. It's something that gets, it's caught. And that when that happened, I knew I was on the right track.
Yeah.
That she had seen things in me that she wanted to emulate. And so I was honored to do that. And of course, honored to serve at the Christian Service Center and the work that we did down there. So,
And you know, that was something that brought so many churches together during the years you were there. And you would have the opportunity, like you said, to work directly with pastors, which obviously means you're working with their congregations as well. And to see that a big area like Orlando, where all of these churches are coming together for one single cause, there's a lot of administration that's in there. But your leadership gift was obviously used by God during that time.
Well, I think he used me. But one of the things that I've tried to do is that when you bring a church when you bring a church together, one of the things that I think that Christ tells us to do is he tells us to love one another. So we don't have a choice. That's what our commandment is. And the second is when you ask him, what does it mean to love one another? He goes, well, let me tell you a couple of stories. And he ends up basically saying, basically what it says in Micah, your job is to love those that don't have what you have. And that is a relationship with Christ. So widows, orphans, those are the ones I want you to go after. And Christ was the example of that. When you begin to start gathering churches, you gather them on that level of service. Churches want to join. We were apolitical, if you want to call it that. We didn't do anything in terms of the politics. And candidly, because that's not the choice. The choice is we want you to serve. People are hungry. Come help us. People need a place to stay. Come help us pay for that. There are kids in our schools that are hungry. Come help us accomplish that task. And some churches will say, no, I can do it better myself. Okay, great. God love you. I mean, kind of like, as long as you're doing it, doesn't matter to me. We'll go someplace else. I mean, the fact of the matter is that we always want to work ourselves out of a job. Mm-hmm. We want the churches to do it themselves. But sometimes it's the administration of bringing churches together. A good example is that Daily Bread, we serve roughly six. I retired from there last year, so I still feel like it's part of me. But you serve roughly 6 days a week, and we serve roughly 300 people a day in one location. At another location, we serve roughly 125 to 150. So on any given day, we could be serving 500 people that have got no place to go. And we have churches that come down and provide the food. We have churches that come down and provide the volunteer leadership. We have churches that come down and give us a whole week of their time, churches that can only afford one day of their time. And all that is kind of happening. And when you begin to start gathering that together, you look around and go, this isn't me. Somebody else has done this, and I get a chance to kind of hold on to the stirrups for a few minutes.
Mm-hmm. It's really so exciting to see somebody like you that you're right in the middle. You're in that vortex of activity, and things are going around. But I love the humility that you have, brother, and you're right. God calls us to lead, but he gives the leadership gift there before, and that's what he's done with you. Before we take a quick break, in a moment, I want to get into what you're doing right now. You're a city council. You've been in, three terms?
Four terms.
4 terms already. And you're in the process for, I guess this year will be another election.
Right. In November,
And so this would be number 5 for you. When you look around and you see all the things that are going on in the world today, what encouragement could you give to people who may be thinking about that kind of servant leadership civically and getting involved and running for a public office? What encouragement would you give?
Well, let me give the discouragement first. If you're running for office to get a title, it's not worth it. You never will be fulfilled. You want to run because you want to serve. I've told people before, I hate elections and love serving because elections are, it does kind of what you got to go through to get to where you were, what you really want to do is you want to serve. I'm a strong believer in civil discourse, which means that you and I are not going to agree. But in our world, we're going to value each other, even though we have separate opinions.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what a Christian ought to do, frankly. And when you get attacked by it, you know, the answer is that you have every right in the world to share your opinion. And I want that to be the case. But we have allowed the political separations in the country to kind of now fight against one another. Mm-hmm. And so we now have this, you know, these extremes of political parties. that are trying to identify us. And the answer is, we, as Christians, we already have an identity.
Mm-hmm.
And we ought to take advantage of that identity.
What is the way out for this partisanship that's going on? What is the way out?
Deep down, I think it's a change of heart. I often said that we needed something that was so big that all of us had to join together. I felt like, when I go back and look at history, I felt like that was kind of happening prior to World War II. And then when World War II occurred, all of a sudden we all said, forget it. We have a war to fight. That's more important than anything we've got. We come out of it. We're in a state of a Cold War. We did the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And now all of a sudden, over the time, we've allowed these political factions to control. I think it's a change of heart. I think it's turned to each other and go, look, you and I don't agree, but we're not, but I'm going to value you as a person, and I want you to value me as a person, and not let the political rhetoric get between us.
And I think a lot of people would say that is our prayer as well. And it's going to take God to help us get there. There are so many obstacles right now that seemingly are in the way, but the good news is God is God and He's able. And I agree with you. We need to respect one another, even if we don't always agree with one another, and give each other an opportunity to speak. Robert Stewart is my guest. We'll be back one more segment with him. Don't go away. This is Afternoons with Mike here on The Shepherd. Sitting here today with Robert Stewart. Robert is a city council member of the Orlando City Council and is approaching the next potential term, which would be number 5, which is very exciting. And my goodness, what an amazing responsibility it is that I believe that all of these council members, they take it on, and they, I think, in some ways, really do have to fight through all of the political jargon, all of some of the special interest groups that comes in, and somehow through it all, especially for when you're a believer. You've got to believe that at the end of the day, you're going to do and make the calls that are not only right for the community, but that are morally right before God. And I know that would be your heart.
We have a good council. We don't agree on everything. Although I think we are, I think we've done a good job exhibiting civil discourse, that issues are issues and people are people. We're not going to let the two get in the way of each other. All the people we have on the council are believers, which I believe, and they've expressed their faith. I've had the opportunity to pray for them and pray and both through invocation as well as some special events, had an opportunity to pray. I think our council is a good, strong council from that standpoint.
Mm-hmm. So you're also involved, as we mentioned in segment one, in a local church, and that is the Church on the Drive, formerly College Park Baptist. And we recently had on the pastor there, Josh Plant, is such an extraordinary young man. I mean, he's got great vision, great heart, loves, like you, also involved in athletics. But it has become a bit of, I guess you could call him the chaplain of Edgewater.
Right.
And that's quite an honor, I'm sure, for him to get to do. But he's made more than just an appearance there. He's gotten into the lives of some of these guys, and God has used him to lead them to Him.
Yeah, he's done a really great job. And it took that on when he joined as associate pastor, has kind of kept that up as a senior pastor. As we look towards a associate to come in, we hope he can kind of help kind of provide some more leadership as well. Those kids are at a very impressionable age, and there's many of those kids that don't have a father figure.
Mm-hmm.
And they need somebody to step in and provide them a kind of a loving father at the same time. But as a coach, you know, he played ball in high school, and so he's got a little bit of experience, and he helps out in terms of that. Got a great coach over there, Cam Duke, and his dad is very active in the Fellowship of Christian Athletes. So he's got a wonderful experience from that standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
But Josh has done a great job. Our church I love it. It's an interesting church. We're based a lot on older, I would call it older Baptist values, and the idea of that the role of the pastor is a teacher pastor. His role is to lead, not his role is to dictate. And so we feel like that's an important role that we want to take on. That's kind of what a pastor ought to do, much more shepherding than the evangelism side. We also feel like in the traditional Baptist way that people come to the church one at a time because somebody engaged them in coming. In today's world, in Orlando especially, I don't care how flashy you are, people don't come to church because you can't do enough when you're competing against Disney and Universal to get somebody to be there for the entertainment side. Mm-hmm. So you have to have a real heart for what you're doing. And Josh has got a real heart for College Park.
Now, you know, that very statement that you just made is to many people that would think, well, wow, you mean there are churches that really attempt to go the entertainment route? And yet there are. There's without a doubt, there are churches that their focus has not necessarily been the one-on-one discipleship model, but it has been to create an event, a service, a real flashy music with special lights and fog and all of this. And it does seem at times that there's almost a competition between what would be biblical values and just putting on this program.
Yeah, and look, I'm going to get people that are going to be upset with me when I say this, but the fact of the matter is all churches do something a little bit different. I don't think those who do the strong entertainment are not necessarily less Christian than the others. They're trying to attract people of a different type to the church. Years ago, I read a book called Backdoor Christians, and it was a book that's designed around backdoor interviews of people leaving
as the church. As they were leaving, right.
And what happened to them? Why were they leaving? And the fact is, they got attracted to something, but there wasn't something to keep them there. Mm-hmm. What keeps them there is a personal relationship. Either with Christ or with people that are in the church that want to be there. So I don't fault that to be the case, but I know that if you use kind of this model where they come for a different reason, mm-hmm. they tend to stay longer. And if they tend to stay longer, then their life is more impactful to themselves and to their family, as opposed to trying to kind of come in under a flash where you bring a strong entertainment value to it. The second part is that we're all dealing with worship wars, we call it. We don't quite know what the right thing to do is. And so there are a lot of styles. I had the honor when I was with the Christian Service Center to be in 50 or 60 churches a year and to worship with them, from a high liturgical church to a very casual church, from a church that's got wonderful choirs to the churches that had an individual singer that couldn't sing on pitch. And when I went, I just said, this is how they worship. Let me engage in their worship and understand it. And some things I thought were great, some things I didn't. But that's when I'm in that building, my job is to worship and to be engaged in how they're doing it. In my own life, I'd like some liturgical. I like some contemporary. And they all provide this part of my spiritual journey that I think is important. And that's when I teach Bible study, that's kind of what I try to do.
Mm-hmm. And that's a great way to look at it. And we have to get on that whole plan of realizing that the churches are different. Every leader is different. The goal is going to be different. But the big thing that we should do is to do exactly what you're talking about, making sure that we're not really missing out on what are the critical and I believe biblical mandates, is that we are gathering to promote the gospel and to see the gospel shared, which is the good news.
Well, back what I said before, Christ only gave us one commandment, and that's to love one another. Mm-hmm. He repeated, when asked about the greatest commandment, he repeated the two great commandments, love God with all your heart and love your neighbor as yourself. But when he gave us the examples were not to go and have a worship service. The examples were go and love, to take the guy who's on the donkey and to care for him, to care for the leper, to care for those that are turned away from in society and often turned away in our own churches. I think that's in our church, that's what we try to emulate, that there's a love there that we ought to take advantage of, and we ought to love one another. The mission, the journeys that people come in are all in different spots in their own life, but we can, as a Christian, can love them. Mm-hmm. And I think every church wants that. I think they choose to attract people in a different way. And there's some great churches in town that have a strong entertainment value in their worship and have a complementary strong Bible study and tries to get them engaged, much like the churches in California as the leadership of it. But they try to get them engaged as quickly as they can so that they will stay in the church and stay part of the, mm-hmm. of the faith body. And I think that's a great model too. I mean, I think it's, we have the benefit in the United States of every kind of church. So if you want to get engaged, there's a church, I promise you, in Orlando, Florida, that will match what you want. You just have to find them.
Yeah, you have to find it. There's a lot of them, and that's great. And there's never going to come a time where there are too many churches. I don't believe that. Some people will say that. They'll say, why do we need another church? We've got plenty. Well, no, we just need to continue to see, because there are people to be reached all the time. And I know that you are, once again, still involved in leadership, but now you're teaching a Sunday school class, right?
Well, I taught when I joined the church. I went to a class, and there were some former members of the First Baptist in the same class. And I went to the class for about 6 months. And the husband and wife that were running it were former missionaries that I knew from First Baptist Church. And they said, you can't come back here. And I said, I'm here for Bible study. He says, no, you can't come back here. You're now going to go, you need to be serving someplace else. So next week, the Minister of Education is going to take you into the youth group, and you and your wife are going to serve there. I went, no, I'm not. I'm coming back here. He goes, no, you're going over there. And so here, my wife, we have a young child, a baby, actually. And so she and I jump into the ninth grade, and we did youth for 25 years.
And started off a long haul.
And I had the honor of teaching some kids who are the kids of people who I had there. So it's really been sweet to do that. And then we decided that when the kids got out of college that we would do something different. And we withdrew a little bit. And then they asked me to come back and teach an adult Bible study. So I've been doing that for 12 or 13, 14 years and love it. I think I love it because I learn more about where God wants me to be by teaching than just sitting in a class. Mm-hmm. So I team teach with a guy who's a local judge, who's just very, very talented. And he and I decided that we each had a separate class, and we decided we would join the class together and we would team teach. And then it has been wonderful during COVID to be able to do that. So we've done that prior to COVID, but when COVID occurred, it allowed us to go electronic, and we have not missed a Sunday ever since COVID started.
That's great.
We jumped right into electronic, and now today we're doing hybrid. So we have a computer set up in our classroom. Those who want to come in the class can come in. Those who don't can call in. And so we have 12, 15 people every Sunday who are engaged in a Bible study.
So many more not there than physically there.
It's about half and half now. Mm-hmm. We went to in person about 2 months ago. And so we decided that we would try to keep the same thing. I think eventually that the online will go away. But if people are uncomfortable coming in, especially what's going on with the latest variants that's coming out, if they're uncomfortable coming in, let's provide the option, and we can do that. And we can do it with a telephone now. So it's just been really sweet to be able to stay connected with people, even though that they're electronic.
Speaking of this variant then, and all of the stuff that's going on right now in the news with COVID increasing in spikes and going up in numbers, do you see any changes happening in the city here with regards to restrictions?
I think we'll see some mask stuff, but the governor has made it clear that he's not going to do a mask mandate, and he's also made it clear the legislature in the last sessions is that the only person that can declare a state of emergency really is the governor. So we're going to be stuck until the governor decides that something else needs to be done. We're going to be sitting around waiting for that to happen. I would encourage anybody to wear a mask. There are stories now of people who got the vaccine and got COVID. I remember when all this happened, when the first vaccines went out, they said, look, if you're vaccinated, what it means is you're probably not going to have to go to the hospital. It doesn't mean you're not going to catch COVID. It means you're not going to go to the hospital because the symptoms are going to be much lighter than what you expected. Mm-hmm. And that's in fact what's happened. the 1-3% of the people that are in hospitals today, people who had been vaccinated. So it's, those are very unusual cases. But I think that I would encourage people that if you're uncomfortable, wear a mask. The problem is we politicized all this, and we need to make sure that we're doing what's right for the health reasons. And I say that because in 1918, when the Spanish flu happened, they still had Chicago Cub games. Everybody in the stands wore masks.
Hmm.
And they had no idea though about the vaccine and what to do. They just said, we're going to wear a mask because whatever's happening is coming from my lungs to yours, so let's just wear a mask. And they went about with their own business. We're just wearing a mask. And so I would encourage people to do the same thing.
I have not heard that.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for being with me today. We're out of time. Robert Stewart, a city council member, also a very active member in the church on the drive, and an umpire as well. Maybe we'll get to see you sometime out there calling strikes on the baseball field.
Thank you very much.
All right. It's been wonderful to have you. And friends, thank you as well for being with us. We'll catch you next time right here on The Shepherd.